Well, Curtis Bowers is a dedicated husband, a committed Christian, a homeschool dad, a former Idaho state legislator, and in 2010 produced the documentary called Agenda, and then came out with a sequel in 2016. But as you listen to him tonight, you will see that what has been said, what we are seeing, has been forewarned. So please give a warm welcome to our special guest tonight, Curtis Bowers.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Oh, there they are. Wish they could all be with you. But God has been so good to me. The great thing about family is God allows any man, no matter what he does for a living, and any woman, to have the most meaningful life as you prepare the next generation to be faithful, to continue on, and to teach the next generation, It doesn't matter what you do for a living, and it wouldn't matter. The most powerful position in the world is being a mother and a father in a biblical family, but where you are fulfilling your position there of Deuteronomy 6, where you're teaching and training and loving and discipling and correcting and being there, and it doesn't ever end. And Pastor Paul's getting ready to find out as these grandkids are getting ready to come. It's just the beginning. Then the next generation, as long as I am breathing, all I will be doing is inputting in whoever is beneath me and trying to be a blessing to them. And that's your job too. And it's the greatest thing there is. And that's why the left tried to get the women out of the home and say, oh, you homemakers, what are you wasting your time? Go work for a man in the marketplace and have a meaningful life. You know why they told you that and lied to you? Because they wanted your position. Because it's the most powerful position in the entire world. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And they knew it, and that's why they lied, and they're masters of deceit. And tonight I'm going to talk to you a little bit about them, because we need to understand the enemy to be able to be perceptive of deceitfulness and lies. And so then once we become informed, once we understand the times, then we can bless our neighbor by informing them and people around us. Every lie, every story sounds true till you hear the other side. And we haven't been telling the other side for a long time. And so that's why, because they have raised the children the last few generations, they are pretty much in control. And so we've got our work cut out for us. It's so great to be here. I hope you, those that go to this church, I hope you appreciate having a man that, what, number one, is a man and that acts like a man and stands up and speaks the hard truth to you because he loves you and is unashamed. He's only trying to please Jesus Christ. Okay? Yes. Yes, of course. From knowing Paul, I would know he would be like-minded in the same thing. But it's important to be in a church like that. And if you're in one that's not like that, you need to think about getting out. We keep propping things up by our laziness and by our traditions that shouldn't be propped up. And this is off track a second, but this is very important. Listen to me. In 1962... when prayer was taken out of the schools in America, if the next day every single Christian family, which was the vast majority of America back then, would have kept their kids home, guess what would have happened? The very next day, prayer would have been back in the schools. Why is that? Because they have to have our kids to survive. And so we have been propping them up by never standing, never being willing to go, my kids are not going in there when they're brainwashing them and they're telling them lies about origins and about morality and about everything. And because we didn't stand up, we kept propping them up and they became very powerful. And everything you look at is that same way. So we need to do some reflection, some, and repent of some things and ask God to forgive us and then to help us regain the ground we lost because we weren't fighting like we should for truth. There's a saying from the 60s that goes like this. The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. What that means is this. Whatever the issue may be, maybe in the 60s when they were pushing for women's rights and things, the issue wasn't the issue. The issue was the revolution. We're going to use issues, and many of them even legitimate issues, but we're going to use them to work toward the revolution of destroying America from within. So our goal will never be to solve that problem. And maybe it was a real problem. It has nothing to do with that. They're masters of using people to gain power and control and expand their influence. And I'm going to read you a few quotes. I mean, what you're seeing going on in America today, on the streets of many of the larger cities, it's a Marxist revolution. It has not, the issue is not the issue. The issue is the revolution. They're always waiting in the wings for an opportunity to use their organized minority to move, take ground and move forward. That's all this is about. Lenin, who is the, of course, founder of the Soviet Union, but more than that, far more than that, he is the man who was a genius of strategy. He understood how to manipulate people, how to use people, how to get what you want while you're acting like you're trying to help somebody else. He was just a master of that. They still march to his drumbeat. But one of the things he said back in the early 1920s is this, quote, first we will take Eastern Europe, then the masses of Asia. We will encircle the last bastion of capitalism, the United States of America. We will not need to fight. It will fall as a ripe fruit into our hands. They knew what they were doing to rot us from within, where when they'd finally dominated the globe and we were what was left, we would collapse on ourselves because of that immorality. And that's what we see happening today. It's purposeful. It's so purposeful, and we must know that. At one of my meetings, an older gentleman came up and gave me a copy of a letter to the editor he wrote back in 1969 in the paper, an older gentleman. And he in 69 was telling people, don't you see what's happening to our country? It's falling apart from within. And he talks about it here briefly, that in May of 1919, so 50 years later when he was writing this, and now we've been another 50 years, when some of our troops went into Germany, we found a lot of communist papers that had been left there when they had fled out of that area. And it had their strategy and game plan of what they were going to do to take down nations. And here are some of the ones he listed here. This is from 1919, the communist. Corrupt the young. Get them away from religion. Get them interested in sex. Make them superficial. Destroy their ruggedness. Listen to these things. Get people's minds off government by focusing their attention on athletics, sexy books, plays, and other trivialities. Just get them sidetracked. In the 1930s, there's a group called the Frankfurt School. How many of you have seen my first movie? It's called Agenda, Grinding America Down. Okay, some of you, you need to see that. In 90 minutes, it saves you 2 or 3 years of reading books. It condenses it all so you understand exactly what has happened to our country and what you need to be doing to make a difference. And then it's a powerful tool. We made it as a family because we thought, I know my whole life when I've given people books to read and stuff, they never do. They never, I thought, and as I was a representative, I came across a lot of this information and I thought, people need to understand, but I need to give them something that will wake them up. Then when they're awakened, they'll have a tool to wake others up. I mean, how hard is it to invite people over to your house and say, hey, we're going to watch a movie tonight, and we'd love to hear what your opinion is of it when we're done. We'll make some popcorn. One lady in Tennessee, she emailed me, it was a couple years back, and it was so sweet. She emailed me, she goes, I just want you to know, tonight I'm having my 27th showing of Agenda in my home, and I'm making my famous fajitas, and it gets people to come. And she said, thank you so much for giving me something to do for my country. I mean, I was just like, I wrote her back, thank you for wanting to make a difference for your country. But these things, I mean, listen to some of these in relation to today. This is 100 years ago. Divide the people into hostile groups by constantly harping on controversial matters of no importance. Relevant? You know why it's relevant? Because the communists make everything relevant to their cause, their movement, and their ambition to take America down. It's just amazing. Let's see here. Foment unnecessary strikes in vital industry, encourage civil disorders, and foster a lenient and soft attitude on the part of the government towards such disorder. Defund the police. Why, a lot of people don't get this. Until you study how evil their mind is, I understand you don't get it. But I've been reading their books for 20, 30, 40 years, and I've read their books, and you realize, okay, this is how they work. They want chaos. Of course, you can't sell chaos. So you sell a movement that's going to create chaos, and then they are masters of coming in and in the chaos, taking huge leaps forward in accomplishing their goals, whatever they may be at that particular time. And that's what they do. But they just, on and on. It's today. And we wonder what's happening. One of the groups working with Black Lives Matter, they're also masters of picking names for their groups that sound so noble. It's so important. One of their top groups back in the 70s and 80s, as I've been studying communism, one of the top communist groups in America out of Chicago in the 70s and 80s, guess what the name of it was? The Committee to Defend the Bill of Rights. I wonder how many conservative Christian people gave them a check. For that. We're very naive and very easy to be manipulated. Well, Black Lives Matter, as your pastor I'm sure has told you, because I've heard him talk about this, the people that started were communists. One of them was in the communist group Storm, a member of that and involved in that. Another one was working with the Weather Underground, some of the old leaders from that. And they even, the video you showed last week, and it's right on the internet, they say we are trained Marxist. That's what we are. But that doesn't mean anything to young people because they didn't study communism in school. So they're like, Marxist, yeah, that sounds good. I've heard of Karl Marx. Do you know the number one required reading book in our colleges and universities for freshmen, at least a few years back when I read a survey? Number one book required reading for freshmen, The Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx. We wonder what's happening. We shouldn't. Someone once said, you reap what you have sown. One of the groups that works with Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all these other Marxist groups that work together to stir the pot is one called the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement. Here's just a couple of their points of action on their website so you understand what this is really about, that it is a Marxist revolution. This is their words, not mine. Action number one, liberation will be won by any means necessary. There's no right and wrong. We just do whatever we have to do. That's communist viewpoint. Number two, we will destroy the state, police, military, corporations, and all those who run the American plantation. Everything. We're going to just destroy it all so there's total chaos, so we can push up our puppet dictator and have a communist utopia forever. Number four, systems of punishment will be abolished. There will be no law to enforce, no money to protect. It's communism. It's all communal. We'll just all love each other and sing and smoke pot, and it'll be wonderful. It's a total lie. But it's Marxism. That's all these goals are. Goal six, there will be no government. No person or group will have power over another. Well, that's the Wild West. We've already been there. It doesn't work. You have to send the marshal out so there's law and order so people can move there, people can have their life, people can be productive, people can raise the next generation. They don't want that, though. because they want the chaos. A lot of people don't realize this. During the 20th century, if you study the Soviet Union as they took over the 70 countries they took over, most of the countries they took over, they did not roll the tanks in. Do you know that? A lot of people, we always think, oh, they, no. They use movements inside of the countries to stir up the chaos, to get the college professors to say things aren't just, things aren't equal, and they'd stir up commotion where there'd be rioting, they'd be burning down buildings, huh? And they'd be just lawlessness everywhere, and then they would push up their puppet dictator, like a Fidel Castro, and say, I'm for the people, I'm for justice and equality and what's right. And he gets voted into power. Almost every country the Soviet Union took over, they were voted into power. And then once they get all the levers of power in their hand, then it's no more Mr. Nice Guy. And the communist tanks do roll in, and you do what you're told. And it's a very interesting side note on that, an important thing of history. Guess who the first group of people they kill off every time are? No, it's funny. It's different than that. It's the college professors and the young people that stirred up the revolution. They kill them. They line them up. Every socialist, they kill them off. Because they say this, if your own country couldn't trust you, why should we? I mean, you stirred up and undermined your own, and they kill them all off. The very people that created the conditions for the Marxist revolution to be successful, because they realize they're traitors to their own country. We will not allow them to be traitors to us. And then, of course, yes, the pastors, anyone that are dogmatic on anything, but they disappear in the night, and that's the way it goes. It's interesting how when you're a Christian and you're trying your best to follow the Lord, the older you get, you can look back on more of your life and see how he directed your path, like he promises to, if you're acknowledging him in all that you do. I never had any idea I would be speaking on communism when I was in my 50s or making movies on it. But God did know that. Okay? When I was 10 years old, my dad gave me this book to read. It's called You Can Trust the Communist by Dr. Fred Schwartz. He was a godly Christian man from Australia, a medical doctor. And back in the 1950s, he visited America one time, and he saw the propaganda. He saw what was happening on our college campuses. He quit the medical profession, never practiced it again, moved to America, and spent the rest of his life speaking all over this country, all through the 50s and 60s and 70s, 80s, on communism. And he wrote this book, though, in 1960, so it's been 60 years ago. You Can Trust the Communists. I'm going to read you the first paragraph, so you understand what the point he's making by saying that. When Lenin says we will take the Asia and Europe and we will encircle the last bastion of capitalism in America, he means it. A lot of people talk and they're just blowing hot air. They mean it. This is what he says. The thesis of this book is very simple. It is that communists are communists. I intend to show that they are exactly what they say they are. They believe what they say they believe. Their objective is the objective they have repeatedly proclaimed it to all the world. Their organization is the organization they have described in minute detail, and their moral code is the one they have announced without shame. Once we accept the fact that communists are communists and understand the laws of their thought and conduct, all the mystery disappears. And we are confronted with a movement which is frightening in its superb organization, strategic mobility, and universal program, but which is perfectly understandable and almost mathematically predictable. You can trust the communist to be communist. When they say all these quotes they've said, they mean them. We think, oh, things have changed, everything's changed. No, nothing's changed. They have been committed. They don't care if it takes 200 years. They will rule the world. And nothing has changed. Some of their strategies and tactics have. They had to kind of dissolve the Soviet Union because they realized, as we were even told by one of their KGB agents, Anatoly Galitsyn, in the 60s, he said, listen, they've realized they cannot outspend you. Capitalism is too successful. And they're going to have a great deception in the near future where they're going to act like they are gone, but don't believe it. And this is late 68, I believe. He tells that to our FBI and our CIA and everybody, and they say, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He gets so frustrated that in 1984, he wrote a book called New Lies for Old, and he told all this to the American people. He goes, Gorbachev has been groomed, and this has carefully been planned out. This is 1984. And he says, the deception will be so great, I think they'll even take down the Berlin Wall. And then 5 years later, when it happens in 1989, even conservatives are like, wow, can you believe it? We won the Cold War. They took the thing. No, they needed our money to come in there. Ever since they did that and started playing nice communists, we have given them hundreds of billions of dollars. We've opened up our patent office to them. We've given them all the latest technology. If you'll be nice, we'll give you whatever. But that was, we were told by a KGB agent that defected to America, that was their strategy, to take us off guard. And they knew we'd start disarming because, well, if there's no great enemy anymore, what do you need a big military for? They're incredibly strategic. There's nothing they do by accident. Don't mistake them for us. Well, we don't even know what we're doing. Don't ever mistake that. It doesn't work that way. So Black Lives Matter, we talked about that. The game of that is this, divide and conquer. And here's what I want you to know. The black people in our country, I live in Alabama. So half my neighbors, they're all black people and I love them. And the fact is they have been mistreated in this country. They were not treated like they should have been. And finally in the 60s, when they were starting to be treated like they should, the Democrats realized, uh-oh, they're going to be free. And Lyndon Johnson, who hated black people openly, you read his own books and what he called them and how he talked about them, they came up with the Great Society programs. They realized if they're going to be free to vote and free to do all this stuff, we need their votes on our side. So they came up with the Great Society programs, which were purposeful in knowing they were going to enslave the black people in entitlements. So they couldn't be free. And so the father couldn't be in the home or you lose your check. And all these things that would necessarily make their families to fall apart. Because even the left in the 60s knew if the families fall apart, you're in trouble. And that's what's happened. But this, again, Black Lives Matter is another group that doesn't want to help black people. It wants to use black people. And that's why we have to say, no, you cannot do that to them. You've abused them for too long. I'll just tell you this, a quick little story too. And I've started to do this more and more, and I encourage you to as well. Just driving from Tennessee to here, I was at another meeting. Several different times I've done this in the last few days. There was a bench, and a couple of black men were sitting on it outside this hotel I was staying in. I think they were waiting for their wives. And I just felt convicted. I need to talk to them. And I came up, and how y'all doing? And great, great. And I said, with all that's going on in our country, I just want to tell you something. I'm white, as you can tell. I've been in the white world my whole life, and I have known thousands and thousands and thousands of white people, and not one of them hates you like you're being told. It's a lie. I just wanted you to know that. I wanted you to know we love you. We are sick of how the left is using you and trying to enslave you. But I just want you to know that. And these men just lit up. What the one guy that had a cowboy hat on the one side, he goes, tell that to every black person you know. And I said, I'm trying. They were free. I said, they are trying to divide and conquer us. If your skin's a little darker shade than mine, Jesus didn't care about that. He died for all of us. And they, of course, have a lot of Christian heritage in their thing. They're like, yeah, the good Lord whatever took care of us. I said, yes. But then I did with another black family I saw at a restaurant. And it's so well received. And I said, just don't let them lie to you. White people don't hate you. There might be a handful out of 300 million Americans, but I'm sure there's a handful of black people that hate white people. But the vast majority, we love each other. We want to get along. We want each other to prosper. And so anyway, that's a side thing. But that's what we need to do because there's another attack now to pull them in. What is Black Lives Matter doing? It's going up and stirring up people, the young black people in the neighborhoods, where they go riot and go do these things. They're the ones that get arrested. They're the ones that get a criminal record. They're the ones that wrecks their life. And the leaders slip off in the darkness where they came from. This is against black people. It's so evil to the core. And you have to know that and you have to talk about that. The main point of it is this. again, for 70 years, they've been saying, we've got to get rid of local police. Because once we get in power, if there's local police, they will not do what we tell them to do. Because they know us. They live amongst us. They're not going to come raid our homes and stuff like that, especially if you live in smaller communities. So we need a national police. Well, I've been reading the leftist stuff for the last several years, and they're really, it's not even just a national police anymore, like Obama talked about when he first came into office. I don't know if you remember, that was one of the first things he said. We need a national police that is better funded than our military. Our military gets $1 trillion a year. So he wanted a military machine. But the left has turned much farther than that now. Now they're saying in all their publications, we can't even trust Americans to do that. We need police from the United Nations to govern every town in America. Because they will not be biased. They will not be... And so then you have people that don't even live in your country that will obey, of course, whatever they're told to do. That's what this is about. It's nothing new, though. Do you realize this? This will shock you. Back in the 1960s and 70s, when they first started to stir up the Marxist Revolution, they didn't realize how much Christian fabric was still left in this country. And it could never get traction. But do you realize the Weather Underground, of course, Bill Ayers was part of that, was the mentor to our president. None of this stuff changes people. Okay? But between, in just an 18-month period, 18 months of 1971 and 72, guess how many bombings of buildings there was in America? Now, just in your mind, just kind of come up with a number. This is just 18-month period, just in America, not worldwide, just in America, in 18 months of time in this early 70s. Over 2,500. 2,500 buildings were bombed in America in 18 months in 1971. This is nothing new. It was the Weather Underground, the Students for a Democratic Society, and the Communist Party USA. And they were hoping that all that violence would stir up people to just start just destroying the whole country, so they would have to have a change of things. You'd have to have totalitarian measures because the whole country would be in chaos. And it didn't work because there was still some Christian fiber in our young people. So they got a couple college campuses riled up, but they just couldn't do it. Well, they've had two more generations of raising the children. Remember what I said earlier? The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And they think this time maybe they're ready. Another fact, the Green Movement. The Green Movement. Just real quickly, so you understand all these things. The issue is never the issue, right? It's all deception. I mean, who's not for clean air, water, and stewarding our resources? Who's not? Everyone's for that. They know that. So they go, okay, how do we package that as a movement where that's not its goal, though? It has nothing to do with clean air, clean water, and stewarding our resources. It has to do with pushing our agenda to take America down. So we were so naive, we just take them, oh, they're going to help us? Yeah, they're going to help us. Here's the three fundamental building blocks of the environmental movement. Number one, CO2 is a pollutant. If you went to government schools, that probably sounds like, yeah, I heard that. If you didn't, it's laughable. CO2 literally is plant food. And here's the thing that'll blow your mind. Is the current level of CO2 in the atmosphere is 400 parts per million. Well, that doesn't mean anything unless you go, well, what's the best level? What level are we trying to get to for everything that's green? Right? We're the green movement. Do you know what the optimum level is for everything that's green? 1,600 parts per million. We're at 1/4 of the optimum level of CO2 in the atmosphere for everything that is green. That's why greenhouse growers pump CO2 into their greenhouses to double, triple, and quadruple the level so the plant growth just explodes. Every time you double CO2, plant growth efficiency increases 35%. So the same tomato plant, if you double the CO2, produces 35% more tomatoes or wheat or whatever you have. And they're saying, no, we got to stop it. We should give awards to whoever has the biggest carbon footprint. It's literally that crazy. But here's strategy, Marx's strategy. When you're brainwashing, you have to brainwash the exact opposite of the truth. You cannot just tell a lie that's off a little bit. because it doesn't pull them away far enough. It has to be the opposite. And when someone has been taught something that is opposite of the truth, it's hard for them ever to pull out of that to be able to believe the opposite is what is really true. And that's why they do that. But CO2 is... I interviewed Dr. Patrick Moore in the second movie. He's the founder of Greenpeace. He cares about the environment. And I said, Dr. Moore, why did you have to leave Greenpeace in the 80s? He said, because the Marxists took it over. He said, all they cared about is destroying world capitalism. And he goes, the very things they're doing are hurting the environment, and I'm not for that. He has a new environmental group up there doing real things, to really steward things and take care of things, instead of just waste this money. You know, what, a lot of you might say, well, why are they against CO2? Why do you think they're against CO2? Two reasons. One, everything productive produces CO2. Energy, electricity, when you go, when you drive, and your breathing produces CO2. It makes you the enemy. And you get enough people to believe it, hey, we got to cut the population. Their first commandment of their new Ten Commandments that's carved in stone in Georgia, I went there and looked at it, is we have to have the world's population below 500 million. Well, we have 7.5 billion right now. So that means 7 billion people need to go. And that would just be a crazy idea until you go, wait a minute, the people that believe that are the people in positions of power all over the world. That's scary when that's the case. Second thing is overpopulation. There's 120 different countries right now that are dying off because they're not having the 2.1 children per woman to just say stagnant. You have to have America's at 1.7 now. We're not even reproducing. We're just slowly dying off. All of Western civilization's dying off. They'll be gone in a short order. All the countries of Europe, in 30 years, there will not be one left. That's my prediction. It's not a guess. It's demographics. It's science. They will be gone because they're allowing so much immigration in because they have to. They haven't had any children. And so those people are having children and will take over Europe, and it will be an Islamic continent before we know it. And that's guaranteed because they're continuing not to have children. So there'll be no France, no Germany, no England. It will be gone. If you're young, if you live 30 more years here, it will be gone. All Western civilization. And guess what the first thing they'll do is? They will scrub the history of Western civilization from the earth. Every church will be burned down or turned into a mosque. And all our history. They will remove all our crosses on the beaches above Normandy. All those will be removed. Every single one of them. That's what they've done in many places they've taken over. They scrub everything of Christian heritage out. One thing to be paying attention to is Agenda 2030. That's a big year. It's only 10 years away, and they think world government and everything should be totally in full swing by then. Just 10 years. And so pay attention. And the world they're creating is like the Green New Deal. Good old AOC. Isn't she brilliant? She should have stayed in the bar serving drinks. Here's the facts, too. Another area, the news media. 6 corporations owned over 90% of all media in America, actually worldwide. 6. And that's even counts the music industry. It counts the Hollywood, the movies, the news we're getting. And the reason that was such an important goal of theirs that they wrote about in the 40s and 50s, we got to take over media. It's because when you control information, you control people. How is that? What do you make decisions based on? The information you have. So if they can control what you're told, they're going to control what you do. Because they give you the information, and then you're going to base your decisions off of that. So that's what they've done, because they knew it was so, so vital. The censorship, of course, is just ramping up now, too. Not only do they have 90% of all information, now they're going, we can't allow any alternative view out there. I mean, YouTube is scrubbing everything. I had some of my podcasts. I have a podcast. I just put on there. Where it's me just talking. They pull them down within a week or two. No, it's inappropriate. I'm just talking about the Rockefeller family or this or some of the things going on globally. Nothing. No big deal at all. But they yank them down. Nope. Breaking community guidelines. I read their community guidelines and it says nothing about that. But They're the boss, and that's what they're doing. I was just at a conference speaking in Tennessee, and it was live streaming on Facebook. Boom, they yanked me down the second it came on. I think they've got my number, so they know anything I post. And they just, but before you know it, they'll scrub my website, where I have no access to anyone. They'll scrub my ability to take credit cards. They'll scrub, and that's what they do. Because guess what? It's a war. What does Ephesians 6 say? We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. We're in a battle. The Bible tells us that. But we haven't been active. We don't have the armor on. We're not out there. Okay, we're ready. Where are they? We're playing footsies with the world and thinking it's going to be okay. It's not. I'm just telling you, I've studied these people. I've seen the old black and white movies of what happens when they do take over a country. You don't want it to happen here. I promise you. The raping, the pillaging, the slaughter. I mean, Stalin got mad at one group of people in the Ukraine back when he was the dictator, and he said, cut off food to them. And over 6 million Ukrainians died. And I've seen some videos, some old black and white footage where some news people had slipped into that country through the mountain. And let me tell you, starving to death. Had children just laying there dying. The parents can't even pick their kids up because they're starving to death. 6 million of them. Erased them. What did Mao do? The leader of China, when he came into power, he liquidated between 60 and 80 million of his own people. We're both in trouble if they come to power. No, you're dead. In the middle of the night, we'll disappear. You're done. You're over. We will not tolerate any opposition to us. And they make an example. I have interviewed hundreds of people that have lived in communist countries. They come up to me and kiss me and hug me every time I'm at a place and speak. And they go, I grew up in Romania or the Soviet Union or Cuba or China. Thank you for trying to wake people up. We can't live through this again. And you, when they talk, it sobers me. And one of them told me this once, a Cuban guy that grew up in Cuba. He said, when they first, he goes, my family was fighting for the communist revolution because we believed their propaganda. We thought Fidel Castro was for the people. And he goes, the wake-up call, he was in power for about 6 months and didn't do too much. He was just kind of organizing things. And he said, one night we were watching the evening news. And my uncle was on there. And all of a sudden a firing squad shot and killed him right on the evening news while we're watching. And we realized something's changed. And he goes, my dad came home from work the next day. He goes, we had the second biggest sugar plantation in all of Cuba. And my dad came home the next day, couldn't even talk for 2 days. Literally couldn't say anything. He was so disturbed. He goes, they've taken everything. Now I just go work and pick the sugar cane in the field for them and stuff. And it was just, he said when he was 18, he'd be walking the road just to go to the store or something, and police would pick you up, throw you in the back of the car, take you to their gulags, and throw you in there for a day or two, and then let you out. You didn't do anything. You weren't doing. And he said they just wanted you to know who the boss was. So everyone's in terror. And every single family had one person that was bought off. So you couldn't even, he goes, we couldn't even talk in our own family. When he was going to escape, he goes, I couldn't even tell my own parents. Because I didn't know if they might tell an uncle or someone that's being paid by the party to be an informant, and they get extra alcohol or chocolate or whatever to tattle on their family. It's terror. And I said, he was 65 now. He's been in America for 50 years. And, oh, maybe 70. And I said, what was that prison like? He's been in America 50 years, and this is what he did. I can't say. He's still in so much horror, he goes, I can't say. That's where communism leads. It's a lie. And our young people believe it's not that. The churches, social justice is the movement that is destroying all of your churches, if you didn't know. And even the last bastion of conservatism was the Southern Baptist, where they'd been pretty solid on Bible issues and this is God's word, let's do what it says. And they, the top people, the J.D. Greers and the people moving up in that, they're in love with the world. And you're going to see that denomination change over the next 5 years like you can't believe. And it's sad because we're supposed to be the light to the world. We're supposed to have the truth. We're supposed to protect the innocent by telling them the truth and by not allowing people to abuse those that are naive and innocent. Instead, the church is using the church to fight for these meaningless, evil causes. And we got to say enough is enough. The social justice, you even study the history of it. And you go back in the 1880s, Dr. Walter Rosenbusch was the man who came up with the idea of the social justice gospel. He said Jesus didn't die on the cross for our sins. He died as an example of we're supposed to be sacrificial for others. And I mean, he was a member of the Fabian Social Society. If you don't know who they are, you need to see my movies. Their goal was to socialize the world. And one of his good friends, Dr. Harry Ward, was in the Lutheran Church, or the Methodist Church, sorry. And he was also a Fabian. But guess what also? He was a member of the Communist Party. And Dr. Harry Ward and Dr. Walter Rosenbusch started that whole social justice movement. And they also started something that's very interesting. The National Council of Churches was started by two Marxists back in the 1920s and 30s. It all makes sense if you go back far enough to see what has been happening and why it's been happening and who's been doing what. We can't listen to words anymore. We got to look at actions. Everyone says they're for everybody, and we're losing 80 to 90% of our young people. That's our numbers. That means what we're doing is not working. So that means you got to change what you're doing when it's not working. We got to get back to family and instruction and teaching and protecting. Tell their friends to go home. I told my kids when they were young, listen, try not to ever have friends your age. Either have them much older so you can learn something from them, or much younger so you can be a good influence on them. Don't waste your time with ignorant people your same age. You have nothing to offer each other. No, come on. No, but you have nothing to offer each other. So I'm not against friends. I said just pick them wisely so they're a benefit to you or a benefit to them. But where it's just, hey, what do you think? I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. You don't know anything. But that was all part of that's Marxism. Age-segregated peer grouping. They said if we can divide the generations off at year levels, no one will be influencing anyone except us. We'll have total control. That's all it was about. My oldest boy, Charlie, I remember when he was 12, all of his best friends, his five best friends, were all 60 plus in age. And they call, I remember one day getting five calls, and even Christian and Carver, who were, 10 and 8, they'd just beg, can they come work on our farm today? We lived in the rural Idaho, and they'd fight over them because they enjoyed investing in them because they didn't have their family around. God designed men and women to be investing in the next generation. And if your kids aren't around here, your grandkids aren't around here, or you've lost them, you find other kids to invest in. But you're supposed to be dumping it down. Whatever you have learned in wisdom and knowledge and understanding, we have to do that, or they're all sitting ducks for whatever sounds good instead of what is good. And we've got to do that. So the church is just a mess because of that. So you got to, when you got a good church, you've got to stand with it, support it, and encourage others to be here. Lastly, on some of these issues, there's so many, but just one more I'll do. COVID-19. I don't think anyone's sure yet if this Red China did this intentionally yet or not. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, if they did, it doesn't really matter. We know who they are. But here's the thing. Like I said, they're always waiting in the wings for any opportunity to abuse the people and to gain ground. And it's, if you look at this whole thing, it's accomplished all the things they want to accomplish. That's why you go, is that possible to be so consistently always their way? They hate President Trump. I mean, they just hate him because he's not part of all this establishment stuff, Republicans or Democrats. They just hate him. And so it was a way to take him down. They hate a booming economy. Do you know why? Because it makes you free. If you're able to make excess and provide for yourself, they don't have much to offer you. You can't grow big government in a booming economy because there's nothing for it to do. There's nothing. So they have to hurt the economy. They don't ever want to act like they're doing that, but they love it when they can to create more dependency, which guarantees votes, which guarantees power and control, which is the name of the game. It also destroys some. This has been so successful at destroying something they hate so dearly. I've seen from their papers, small business. They hate small business. They cannot stand the fact in America a guy can go down and start a little restaurant or start mowing lawns or whatever and become prosperous, become even wealthy from just hard work. They hate it. And so this has been, they say 25% of restaurants will never reopen. Those are all small business. All those little independent restaurants that can't be closed. I was in the restaurant business for 20 years, so I understand it's a fine line to making it and not making it. And if you have to be closed for 6 months or it can only have a few people come in, you're done. You're done. The mask issue. Here's what I've noticed over my lifetime. The declaration is crystal clear on where our rights come from. That's the most important document in our history of this country. It's not the Constitution. The Constitution was just stating some of the obvious areas we had God-given rights. Okay, it was not, but the Declaration said they're from God, and so they cannot be infringed upon. So just that laid down the bedrock right there. Okay, well, they all take an oath of office where they swear to uphold the principles in the Constitution, which are protecting our God-given rights. That's the only reason they exist. Any level of government is to protect our God-given rights. That's it. Nothing else they're doing. Well, as they have slowly decided that's not enough power for us, we keep submitting when we shouldn't be, because they have no authority there. It's not disobeying. It's not Romans 13 where you're going against a legitimate authority. It's not legitimate authority. Okay? I mean, if the governor came in my home and said, Curtis, I want you to make me a steak dinner, do I have to make him a steak dinner because he's the authority over me? No, of course not, because he has no, that's outside of his jurisdiction. We have to understand jurisdiction. But if I tell him, get out of my home, he has to obey me, because this is my jurisdiction, and he has no authority here. And we have been, so many pastors preach, as long as it's not sin, you have to obey. That's a lie, not in America. America, our founders are smart enough to go, wait, we're going to put the government underneath the people. They're public servants, right? And we've allowed them to, they started flipping it. I mean, back when they said, you know, we recommend you wear, this is how they do it, we recommend you wear a seatbelt. Well, anyone with a brain knows, yeah, I probably should put my seatbelt on. We don't need them to tell us that. But slowly, it first was optional and then became mandatory. They have no right to tell us to put on a seatbelt inside of our automobile. They could say, it's a good idea, we encourage you to do it. They cannot say you to do that. But we submitted. Oh, okay. Again, we wanted to wear them anyway because it's common sense. But the areas like that, they slowly encroach. First, masks were optional. But then they become mandatory. That's what they're doing on everything. They test us to see how much sheeple we are. And they go, okay, these idiots will do anything. That's what's happening with this now. These governors in these liberal states that are doing it, they know they have no authority to do anything, but they love when they can see the sheep trembling in their homes when they're all on house arrest. I'm just telling you, and some of you, if you're new Christians, and this sounds intense, Pastor Paul will be happy to talk to you anytime and explain that this is not rebellion. It's standing for what is right. Okay? And again, so I don't want it to sound like that, because that's not what it is. But see what happens when we submit to them when they have no authority, it gives them the illusion they do have that authority. And so they're just going to do more and more and more. And the reason we cannot stand for it is this. God told us to love our neighbor. And our neighbor might be naive and not understand all this, and they're living in terror. I hate in my community. I go to Lowe's or Walmart. Some of these sweet older black men that I'll talk to at Lowe's, they have that mask on. They are really in terror. And I'm like, how dare you do that? Here's the facts on the mask I was just getting into and then got into some of that. Listen, though. I've read all the medical reports because I wanted to know. I want to know what's wise to do. I have a lung disease. I don't know if you know that. I have COPD. If I got that thing, I'd be gone like that. But so I'm concerned about things. I'm not, and I'm alert. But here, so I read, should I wear a mask? I looked through it. All the medical studies that have been done where they have a control group with 300 people that wear surgical masks too, not just a piece of fabric across their mouth, surgical mask 24 hours a day, and then 300 people that don't wear any mask. During flu seasons, guess what? Guess what percentage less the people that wear the surgical mask 24 hours a day, even when they're sleeping, guess what the difference is? Nothing. Not even one percentage point. You're being lied to. And they know that, though. You read the CDC report from May, and they said, we've studied all the studies that have been done on masks, and they don't seem to be effective against a virus. And yet they say, you have to have that on. And they allow you to do anything when they know. I mean, when you have normal fabric there, the holes in that are like a basketball net to a virus. I mean, it's stupidity. It's total stupidity. Again, if it really worked, I would have one on because I need to be. I'm one of the high-risk group that needs to be careful. I need to be careful. But most of you, you're not in that group. And so it's nothing to be fearful of, even if you get it. We're to this point because of these vaccinations and Bill Gates and what's going on with some of that, that, I mean, we're like to the point, I think, if we know someone that gets it, I'm going to have my wife and all my kids go over there and get it. I'm going to go stay with my parents for 2 weeks. No, I'm going. So we've had it. So you're not going to try to pump some poison into us about this. So we're spirit, as Christians, we're to fear no one except God. And when anyone... And when anyone tries to make you fearful of something besides God, watch out. Watch out. I know he wants me speaking around. A lot of people go, why are you speaking around? Because I know I'll only get that if he wants me to get that. And if my time's up, then I just want to be faithful as long as I am. And he can take care of the rest. And Pastor Paul's dealing with that same thing with health issues. We're supposed to be faithful to the end. That's our job. He's the one that takes our little loaves and fishes and feeds the 5,000. He does the miracles. But we have to just say, here's my fish. Would you do something with it? And he'll say, thank you. That's all I need. Sit down. Everybody's eating. And that's it. That's what we do. That's what you do with your life. Well, I don't have much talent. I don't either. But when I said, I want you to do whatever you can do with it, he said, well, I can do it because I can do the impossible. I can take someone that doesn't have much to offer and I will do great things with them. It's him. He's everything. Jesus Christ is everything. There's nothing else. Do you understand that? Nothing else. And the only... And the only thing this life is for is to live in such a way it makes him look good. That's why we love our neighbor. So when we tell them, we share the gospel with them, they're like, that guy is different. Maybe Jesus does make a difference. That's what we're here for. Don't you get caught up like lost men and think of this is our playground. We have all eternity for the fun and games. And it will be wonderful. And there'll be no COVID or anything else. It will be just unbelievable. So in closing, let me just tell you a couple of things. I've gone a little bit over. I'm sorry. You got me all wound up. And we're going to do a couple questions maybe. You may get set up for that. I just encourage you, as all this stuff's going on, a couple of things. One's be prepared. We've seen over the last 6 months that whether it's a pandemic, a natural disaster down in Alabama where I was, there was big storms that went through and our power was out for 7 days, parts of it, or whether it's, riots and all these things going, we live in very fragile times. And I think it's wise. If you had a couple months of food, a couple months of medicine, if you use medicine, a couple months of supplies in your homes, where if something really got bad, you could stay at home for a couple months to pray and to think about what should we do? What's plan B? What's plan C? What's plan... Just to be wise. I just encourage you to do that. I've never told anybody before this last season that kind of thing, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to do that because I want it... If maybe next time they're going to release something that really is deadly. They have it. They have genetically modified smallpox in the labs in China that would take out 90% of our population in 60 days. Okay, so it's there. Don't you fear it, though. Anyone that gets tight, don't you get fearful. You're not getting that unless God says your time is done. But we need to be wise. We need to go, okay, if something like that's going on, it'd be nice to stay home. We need to be prayerful. I know you know that, but do you really get down on your knees by your bed at night and say, God, help us? God, what would you have me to do? I'll do anything you ask. Please just make it clear. We need to really do that. We talk about prayer a lot in the church, but we don't do it a lot of times as much as we should. It's time to be praying. I promise you that. I know what's going on. And I know, I'm like, it's time. If you ever should be praying, he's praying right now. And then be ye separate. Come out from among them and be separate and wise. We need to quit being propped up in their system. Just like the school system I talked about. Guess what? In the 60s, when Hollywood first started putting junk in the movies, if Christians would say, we're not going to them anymore. Forget it. We don't want all this garbage in there. Guess what would have happened? They'd be still making clean movies today. Why? Because they need us. Theaters would go out of business overnight if all Christians said, we're not going anymore. We're sick of the garbage. We're not paying for it. We're done. And they would start making some clean movies, whether they like it or not. But we're like, oh, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. God is holy. He hates sin. And we're supposed to hate sin. That's the beginning of being wise. When you fear God, you hate what is evil, which shows you're starting to become wise. And we need to be wise in this day and age. So maybe there's a few questions, and then we can close in prayer.
Folks, there's so much more. The videos over here, I couldn't recommend any more highly. I have both of them at home and have been through them, and it's a great resource. What do you have on your table, first thing?
Yes, just real quickly, this is what kind of funds us as we've been traveling as a family for 10 years all over America trying to wake the troops, because this country is worth it. And I'm trying to leave a better country to my children, and we haven't done that, so there's a responsibility as a father. We've got the movies and some books. If you haven't seen them, I promise you when you get them, you go, I'm glad I got this. If you cared about anything I just said, you will go, oh, these are so good, and they're so helpful in helping me wake up other people. We also have this one pack. It's lots of our videos, books, our family sings together. God's blessed musically, where we have these beautiful CDs of hymns and things. And then we have these posters that are the charts in the movie of all the connections of all these, so you can see them and stuff. But this pack on our website is $200 for this exact same pack. It's $100 when we're here in person. So those that would like to get extra resources before the election to wake others up, this is a blessing to us. But everything else is just $10 each. Individual movies, individual CDs, individual books. And whatever you get, it's a blessing to us. But I think you'll find it's a blessing to you as well.
We just have time for about 8-9 minutes of questions. Then we're going to close and be out of here at 8 o'clock. Cheryl.
I think you'll hear me. What do you say to someone who says, as a Christian, you just need to love your neighbor and put your mask on and do what the government tells you to do? They usually bring up, I believe it's Romans 13, that says you're to obey the government. What do you say to them in times like this?
Don't throw your pearls before the swine. Listen, I think there's a time and a place. We need to know who we're around, what's going on. I think there's times to be sensitive and go, this might be a little too much for them. I've had mine on sometimes. I carry one. When I tell someone's nervous that I don't, I'm like, I don't want to make them, so I'll do it for them. But we need to realize that's not, those people are using that most of the time as an excuse to never stand up for anything. Why? Because it's so easy not to. But God didn't put us on earth for easy. He said, you are the light of the world. You're supposed to be out there. And he goes, you will be persecuted. And so when you share good information with people, if they have no interest, go find somebody else. I've lived long enough that you can't make anyone believe anything. But you, if you keep being faithful, planting your seeds of the gospel and truth and other things, you'll find the people that go, wow, that was really interesting. I didn't know about that. And you'll say, okay, that's a person worth investing in and encouraging and inviting to church and giving them good materials so they understand what's going on. It's one more person that all of a sudden gets it. You've doubled yourself. That's the whole life of a Christian, is multiplying ourselves through the Great Commission of not only sharing the gospel, but then teaching all these things whatsoever I commanded you. And that's what a Christian's to do.
Yep. Yep.
There's an old saying that figures don't lie, but liars figure. And I'm a mathematician, as some of you know. And this is the biggest lie, this whole COVID stuff. pick a particular statistic. They blow it up. They get you scared about it, but they don't put the things in proper perspective and proper mathematical consistency. So that's another guilty plank in what you're saying.
No, absolutely. If you read the reports, this is a common flu. The reason the deaths have been higher is because of the old folks' homes. They put them on respirators, which you do not do. 87% of the people that are put on a respirator die, no matter who they are. It is a last resort, and they're using it as a first resort.
Yeah.
They're not giving them the oxygen first, all the things you naturally do. They're putting them on that. Why? Because the government said, if you have a patient that dies and has been on a respirator in a hospital, you get a $39,000 check from the hospital. Guess what? If they didn't die of COVID, how much did they get from the government?
Nothing.
Not a penny.
Mm-hmm.
So when you lost people, you motivated lost people and paid them to do what is wrong, guess what? They'll do it. And so the numbers are so skewed.
Mm-hmm. We got an election coming up here pretty soon.
Yes.
And we've already heard all the talk about mail-in voting. I'd just like to get your thoughts and ideas on what do you think is going to happen. We know they want Trump out. I mean, and they'll stop at nothing. But what do you think is going to go on? And then if I could ask a second question, all this rioting that's going on all over the place, where's it ending? Is it going to continue and go from city to city? If Trump gets in it as the president, is it just going to all of a sudden stop? Or what's going to go on? If you could speak to those two things. Thank you.
And I don't know for sure, obviously. My opinion is on the election, I don't even have an opinion. I know they don't want him in there. I know that. And who knows what they could pull out of their hat the week before, whatever. Mail-in voting is no good. It's so easily corrupted. They already know that in all their ways they do that. And it's already been corrupted. You know, millions of ballots corrupted in the last several elections that we know of. So yes, they want it. They're corrupt. They're evil. So, of course, they want the system where they can control it because they want to be in charge. And as far as Trump, the reason I even talk about those preparation things, I think, just looking at things, we could be in trouble either way. If Trump gets reelected, I think they're going to come unglued. I think they're going to try to burn this country down because he's not our president. And so you know, and if he doesn't get reelected, we know where they're going. They've told us where we're going now. They're not hiding anymore. We're going to a socialist future with Medicare for all. Socialized medicine, and on and on. The Green New Deal, to phase out airplanes within 10 years. They want to phase out where you cannot privately own a vehicle. I'm just telling you, they've talked about all this. I've been reading about it for 20 years, but they're finally getting a group of people there that are willing to say, that's what we're doing. And so it's sobering times, but God said, we're supposed to be sober-minded people. Because it's always sober. You know why, even when America was booming in the 50s, why it's sobering? Because every day people are dying and going to hell. As Christian, life's always sober. Because you're like, have we baked something for that neighbor recently? We need to go to, we get the kids to take them something and make sure we give them a track. Let's talk, let's invite them to church again. We're supposed to be sober-minded because, again, this is not a playground. This is a battlefield. That's what this is. This life is a battlefield. And we're serving our commander-in-chief. And that's what we need to do.
Folks, we are at... One more right here. She's got those I'm begging you eyes. Okay, right here. Last one right here. That's all we have time for.
Thank you so much. I'm from UConn. I don't go to this church, but I'm familiar with that gentleman over there. Anyway, I hear from God. One is repent, and what you were doing is repent. Are we going to truly repent for what's going on? And two, there's a rise up. We either rise up and get out from underneath your TVs and your comforts, because you're going to lose them anyway. It doesn't matter whether we do it now or not. And what he teaches in the pulpit about the pastors rising up. Are y'all going to speak about at that conference to get these pastors to rise up? Because if we don't rise up, who's going to?
That's the goal. That's the goal, is educating and equipping the pulpit. Thank you so much. Folks, give Curtis a round of applause. Did you,